Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I'm reading all the comments people are writing on my channels and will respond to some of them in future videos. I will take some of the best comments and put them on my website at historyreviewed.com. I want to thank the viewers who point out errors so that I can fix them. My video platform is up, which means that you can view non-YouTube videos on my website. Videos which have been banned from YouTube can be viewed there. A lot of my videos have been banned in Europe. There is an agenda to stop white people in Europe from hearing the truth. Lots of my videos are banned in France, Germany, Italy, Poland, Switzerland, and Czechoslovakia. The total population of these countries is 260 million. Europeans are welcome to come to my History Reviewed website to view the videos which they have been blocked from viewing. You will find a link to my website and to my banned videos in the description below the video. There are also links to my website where you can subscribe and donate. I am looking for subscribers who are willing to subscribe to my channel for $5 per month. Thank you very much. Today I have a surprise for you. I've been looking for an opportunity to chat to Dr. Peter Hammond, who comes from Rhodesia. The two of us grew up there. He's a couple of years older than me, but we have not forgotten any of the things that happened there. And we don't want to see that happening in South Africa. So we have no desire to see a repeat of Robert Mugabe and Robert Mugabe's nonsense here. Unfortunately, during our recording, we had some sound issues. So I did my best to clean it up. And it will have a bit of a tin type of sound to it. It's the best I could do to get rid of the noise and to try and make it clearer. Now, in this interview, we discuss many things. We jumped around a lot of interesting topics. And I really think Christians in South Africa, should sit down and listen. Because here is a very determined Christian, and you should be able to resonate with what he's saying. Now, the liberals, who wanted to get South Africa under black rule, they were continuously harping on how they were bringing freedom to this country. And these same liberal scumbags were telling us whites that they were even giving white people freedom. Yeah, they were saying, "We have freed you white people." Well, they maybe freed us from ourselves. But all these liberal scumbags, they were continuously telling us how South Africa is going to be free and how we need to learn how to live in a free, multicultural, multiracial society and adapt to that. And so the blacks and the white liberal scum, they all said, South Africa's got one of the freest constitutions in terms of human rights and free speech that you can get. It is so free, in fact, that when a black guy like Julius Malema goes and tells newspapers and gets on the TV and talks openly about the fact that blacks should be killing all the whites, that when this thing goes to the Constitutional Court, it gets thrown out. That apparently is not racism. When the president sings a song called Mshini Wami, where Mshini means machine gun, so he talks about bring me my machine gun. So when all of these guys go and they do their talk in front of tens of millions of blacks, and they're talking about killing people, then apparently that is cool. That's very cool. And they are free to do that. But now it seems that those liberal scumbags, they have a problem. And they apparently believe that mainly white people should be shut up. So they've been working behind the scenes for a long time, and they've had some new ideas. Now, my Boer Nazi pal, he was following this nonsense, this free speech, hate speech issue. And he was saying to me that he thinks this deputy minister who's involved in this, this white guy, he's quite sure that this guy is a Jew. And he was telling me that these guys apparently have been working for about 10 years. 10 years on this massive piece of legislation. This draconian communist Bolshevik Eastern European Warsaw Pact type of legislation, which is meant to shut people up in South Africa. And of course, like all things, this is marketed as, oh no, you know, we're going to be protecting people. We're going to be protecting people from hate. We're going to protect them from hate. Now, this is no different to what Bill Clinton and the Jews got up to in America in the 1990s. And Dr. William Pierce spoke about that, about how they try to turn thought into a crime now. Now, this legislation is so draconian, it is something the likes of which South Africa in its entire history, even at the height of evil old apartheid, even at the height of the worst of apartheid, there never existed anything like this. So get a load of this Bolshevik thinking. Apparently, every preacher in South Africa, whether he's white or black, would have to have his sermon checked by the government before he can give his sermon. I can't even begin to think of any place in the world where anyone has tried such nonsense. So apparently, they've been hard at work for 10 years preparing this draconian thing, the goal of which is to chuck you in jail. And maybe it's almost like to chuck you in jail the way that Matt Hale was chucked in jail for 40 years, even though Matt Hale never committed a crime. He never committed a crime. But he's in jail for 40 years. In America. And there are goodness knows how many Europeans in jail, including a good solid bunch of Germans who seem to spend all their time in jail, even though their only crime was that they opened their mouths. There's a barrister in Germany, her name is Sylvia Stoltz. She's in jail for a speech she gave in Switzerland. And then when she returned to Germany, they arrested her, and she's doing jail time. Old women in their 80s who open their mouths are doing jail time in Europe. And there are men doing jail time. So it appears that the liberal scum, being the hypocritical two-faced bastards that they are, at one end of the coin, they are busy telling you, no, no, in America, it's okay, it's freedom of speech to burn the flag. You can burn the American flag, you can jump on it, stomp on it, and do all kinds of nasty things, but that's okay, that's free speech. Malema talking his stuff, no, no, that's also free speech. But now when a white person uses a word on the social media, they want to chuck you in jail for at least 3 months and maybe several years. So, it turns out that the government had to do some sort of consulting with people, and it turns out that a bunch of Christians, among them Peter Hammond and his pals, went and attended some of these government sessions. And then they started asking, where does this idea come from? Where does this idea for this draconian legislation come from? and the deputy minister told them to their faces that the actual place it comes from is the South African Jewish Board of Deputies. Now, the Jewish Board of Deputies is the highest Jewish organization in South Africa. It's the highest Jewish organization in South Africa. So the highest Jewish organization wants to shut people up. It wants to now start chucking people in jail for apparently a hate crime. And clearly, this is more important to them than chucking people in jail for murder, maybe. Why are they bringing all this additional workload onto the South African police and the legal system, which is already massively overloaded? So why is it so important to start chucking people in jail for what they say? Now, the focus of this legislation is not on putting Julius Malema in jail for wanting to kill white people. No, no, no. No, the focus is for insults to black people. Whites must go to jail if they say something, quotes, racist. And this is on the social media where people are gathering together and fraternizing. And they are just engaging in friendly chats. And this apparently is now a place where they need big laws. So in this discussion with Peter Hammond, he tells you that the Jewish Board of Deputies, as well as the gay organizations, they are behind this. Yes, so Jews and gays want to start chucking people in jail for merely a bit of speech. And it's a bit of speech on a forum with friends. Now, the Jews, as always have a reason that they give. If you ask the Jews, why are you doing this thing? They'll give you a reason. Oh, the reason apparently was religious wars. Oh, no, sorry. The reason was the Holocaust. Yeah, the Holocaust. Now, the Jewish Board of Deputies, let me tell you a little bit about the Jewish Board of Deputies of South Africa. Because they're busy people doing a lot of stuff that you don't know about. Now, the Jewish Board of Deputies was busy hunting down Snowy Smith in Durban. They hunted him down and chased him for years. They spent years hunting him down and starting court cases against him because they wanted him punished also for hate speech. They went to tremendous lengths that took years to get Snowy Smith into court so that they could get him punished. Because apparently, on emails, he was a problem. And there's another woman, I think she is a Muslim, a colored Muslim woman. And her surname is Janssen. And the Jews said that after they get Snowy Smith, they're going to go after this colored woman, Janssen, because they want to put her in her place too. And these Jews, they're very busy putting people in their places. Not criminals, not murderers. I mean, that's not important, right? Like, I'll give you an example of a high-profile criminal that the Jews spent time working to destroy. Some of you may know him. He's a British historian by the name of David Irving. Yes, David Irving. When David Irving was on trial, the South African Jewish Board of Deputies was sending documents. I think they even sent documents to Canada. And David Irving was joking and he said, you know, here you are talking about this international conspiracy of the Jews, and the Jews are saying, no, there's no international conspiracy. But the next thing he sees is in the court documents, there are documents submitted by the South African Jewish Board of Deputies in his trial. So they are busy internationally, and it seems to me they are busy shutting people up. And they're shutting up mostly white men, but they'll even go after a colored woman. They'll go and shut her up too, because they don't like what she said. Yeah, so they're not complaining about all the murder and the actual crime in South Africa. Now they're worried about what people say. Individuals expressing their own opinions. This is a problem. This is apparently is a huge problem. So I don't know where the Jews want to go with this. Whether they maybe want to go down the route of Jewish Bolshevik Russia, where Stalin proudly boasted in 1931 that in Russia they execute you for anti-Semitism. They execute you. Yeah, they will put you in front of a firing squad or hang you or something like that if you are an anti-Semite. So I don't know if we're going down that slippery slope, you know, that the intention ultimately is maybe to have us executed if we say something that the Jews don't like. Now, in this discussion, there's a lot of stuff that Peter Hammond brings up. Lots and lots of stuff. From first-hand experience, including things that he saw in Holocaust museums where they blaspheme Jesus and they attack Christians. They put it openly in these Holocaust museums. And it turns out that all around the world, the Jews are continuously busy working on the minds of the youngsters. And that includes, can you believe, South Africa. These Jews grab school children and they send them off to these Holocaust museums where the Jews give them their indoctrination about the Holocaust. And they give them a whole scare story about the Holocaust. And they are doing this around the world. And I've been hearing complaints about this. We have a Holocaust museum in Durban, and there's one in Cape Town, I believe. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's one in Johannesburg as well. I'm sure there probably is. And they take school children of all the races, and they send them off to these Holocaust museums. And they don't just do this in South Africa, they do it all over the show. I've been hearing about it being done on an enormous scale in the USA. In fact, there is one, quotes, Holocaust survivor, and this woman boasts that she has given her Holocaust survival story personally to 3 million American children. Yes, she's told her very interesting story of how she didn't die in the gas chamber. She's told it to 3 million American children. And I was talking to a friend last week, a friend living in Indiana, and she was saying how she had to give permission for her child also to go to a Holocaust museum. And here you'll see that in South Africa they're doing the same thing. My question is, why is this even on the school agenda at all? In what way does this relate to South African history? Why do we need so many Holocaust museums? Don't we need history museums about the history of South Africa, maybe? So Peter Hammond will tell you in here of himself and others who were firsthand in these meetings and what the government said to them. And that the government said to them that it is the Jewish Board of Deputies that is behind that and the gay organization. They are behind this massive move to cut into the free speech that we have in South Africa. And it looks to me as if this is yet another example of Jewish privilege, where the Jews come along. And they get a law passed in a country, and it's a special law. It's a Jewish-only law They pretend that it's not Jewish privilege. No, no, no. This is for the good of the country. But yet, the only people, or most of the people who'll be using it, will be them. Now, I get a lot of my videos banned on YouTube. I had 52 legal notices the other day from Europe. 52 legal notices informing me that my videos on Team White, which I've done with Alex Linder, that these videos are to be banned in Europe. They are banned in France, Germany, Italy, Poland, Switzerland, and the Czech Republic. Now, I've gone and looked up the population statistics, and there are 260 million people living in those countries. That is almost the same population as the United States. Yet, in one day, I get 52 legal complaints to remove videos and to ban them from 260 million people in Europe. And many of my videos have to do with Jewish things, and they are banned in Europe all the time. So why is it that in Europe, in France, in Italy, why is it that in Europe, videos that relate to Jewish issues are banned? Are banned. The entire population of those countries are not allowed to see those videos. Why is that so? And why are these Jews busy trying to mess with our free speech here in South Africa? Are they trying to take us down the European path, where they're going to start banning things across the country? Is this yet another example of Jewish privilege, where the Jews get the government to make a law that works for them? And of course, the excuse for everything is, remember the Holocaust. Remember the Holocaust. That Holocaust where, to my knowledge, not a single body has ever been exhumed and studied forensically. That Holocaust apparently is the excuse for everything, everywhere. And they are running around the world just blasting out new Holocaust museums and taking hundreds of millions of children. It looks to me like it's hundreds of millions of children across the world are being dragged into Holocaust museums. In Germany, the children apparently suffer from Holocaust fatigue. They go to all sorts of lengths and they say to the German children, I'm not kidding, you can go and read about this on the internet. They say to German children, now you must think what it was like for that little Jewish boy who was your age just before he went into the gas chamber. You must think hard about that. So it seems to me they're busy scaring the children and guilt-tripping the children on an unbelievable scale. I wish they would spend that amount of money on helping us in South Africa with murders. You know, our police don't even investigate some of the murders that come their way. Never mind other crimes. They don't even bother with other crimes, other minor crimes like non-murders. That's not a big thing. Our police don't even investigate some of the murders. But it seems to me these Jews have a lot of money, and none of it's being spent on helping us to improve our policing and the murder of people in this country. But they are very concerned about what people say. What people say seems to be a big problem for them. Now, I've been sitting and wondering to myself, if what Peter Hammond says manages to get out and about, I'm wondering to myself whether the Jewish Board of Deputies will actually openly come out and say that they are behind this, or whether the government will now have to start covering for them. And maybe the government will have to say, no, 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 this wasn't a Jewish idea. No, it was our idea. I'm just wondering. But there are witnesses, and it seems there are lots of witnesses. So listen carefully to what Dr. Peter Hammond says, because he talks about a lot of stuff. And Dr. Peter Hammond, by the way, has written a number of books about the Holocaust of black people in Africa. There were blacks in Rwanda murdered by the million. There were blacks who were slaughtered in Mozambique. Robert Mugabe slaughtered 30,000 Matabele in the 1980s. All of these things are real Holocausts. These are real Holocausts. And Dr. Peter Hammond asked one of the people at the Holocaust Museum in Washington, he said to them, listen, are you interested in the Holocaust in Rwanda? And what about the Holocaust in Mozambique? But apparently the Jews are not interested in any other Holocaust. And I've never heard the Jews complain about the Armenian Holocaust, where Christians were murdered in World War I. And you never hear the Jews talking about the 66 million Christians, most of them white, 66 million white Christians who were murdered in Russia. And that figure alone is bigger than the death toll of all the nations in World War II. And in China, there was also a Holocaust. The Chinese communists killed more than 50 million of their own people. But yet the Jews seem to like the Chinese, and I never hear them complaining about China. So yeah, there's some interesting stuff there. A lot of questions that one could ask these Jews. So anyway, listen to Dr. Peter Hammond, and you'll hear he talks about a heck of a lot of stuff. And a lot of it is firsthand. So listen carefully. Here, he's probably the only person in South Africa telling you where this draconian legislation has been coming from. Today, I've got Dr. Peter Hammond here, and Peter Hammond is a very special guest. Peter Hammond is a name that I remember from Rhodesia in the 70s. When I was a teenager, I already heard that name. Peter Hammond was a Christian who was out there fighting communism. And he was already then saying his say and standing his ground. And now here I am in South Africa, and Dr. Peter Hammond is here. And already about 10 and more years ago, when I was doing African Crisis, I was starting to touch base with Peter Hammond. And it's really awesome to see Peter Hammond is out there waging war against communism. And it's awesome to see another Rhodesian out there saying his say, because most of the Rhodesians, sadly, have become very quiet. So, Peter, it's awesome to have you here on my show.
Thank you, Jan. It's good to be with you. I am so grateful for what you've done for faith, for freedom, for speaking up, for opposing communism. It's a battle that started when we were young in Rhodesia, and we're still fighting the same enemy today.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what is so important is that this enemy is global. And in one of your articles and that you wrote, you already mentioned that there's been a war waged, I think, against white people. I think you said a 100 years war. I'm not sure if it was just Western civilization or white people.
Yes, certainly against Western civilization. The 100 years war starting in 1914, and we're not out of this 100 years war. The First World War and the Second World War really one war, and the war that's continued since, it's all been a war against Western Christian civilization, against Anglo-Saxon white people, essentially. And you can see that by the particular hatred that was focused worldwide on miniature countries like Rhodesia and Southwest Africa and South Africa.
Yes, and also we mustn't forget Angola and Mozambique. They were also deep into this, and the commies were coming after all of us, the Portuguese, the Rhodesians, the South Africans, the Germans, all of us getting hammered. And Peter, I remember with absolute disgust them calling Rhodesia a threat to world peace.
Yes, that was very interesting, considering they were the ones calling us a threat to world peace with nuclear weapons, invading countries all over the place with bases all over the globe and with aircraft carriers and so on. And here's Rhodesia with, I mean, really, our total airborne capacity was, I think, 198 airborne soldiers we could mobilize on the Chamoio attack. And that was every helicopter, every Dakota in the whole Rhodesian infantry. The most we could mobilize was 198 airborne soldiers paratrooped down on the terrorist base of over 5,000 at Chamoio. And we still beat them, mind you. But Rhodesia was a miniature country in terms of economy, population, and military. And they called us a threat to world peace. That's rich.
Absolute hypocrisy of the highest order. I agree with you. Absolutely disgusting. Well, Peter, one of the problems here in South Africa that I saw when I came to South Africa was I watched the ANC and I watched these communists at work here in South Africa. And as early as 1983, my brother and I were talking about South Africa because my brother had been in the Rhodesian SAS and later he was being called up for 6 months of the year. And the two of us were looking at South Africa and we were sharing our impressions, and he was saying to me, you know, this country is not going to make it. These people don't know what devious bastards these communists really are. And I said the same to my brother. I said to him, yeah, these people want to fight and they're determined and all that, but they just don't understand how these scumbags come in through the back door.
It is a fact. We're dealing with such a high level of lies. And, you know, in my family, we've battled cancer quite a lot over the last 7 years. My wife's had several bouts of cancer. The middle letter of cancer is ANC. You know, the essence of a cancer is it's a cell in the body that contributes nothing to the body, but it doesn't do its job. It's a rogue cell, and it's undermining the health of the whole body. Because what it's doing is it's sucking out of the body, but it's not putting anything in. Well, that's exactly what the ANC are. They're parasites. They're like the ticks we have to pick off our bodies after going through the bush in Rhodesia. They contribute nothing to you except infection and disease, and they suck the life out of you. They suck blood out of you. And you might survive one tick or two, but, you know, if there's about 50 ticks in a dog, he's going to die. And that's the point. The ANC are cancer. And they're just a bunch of parasites. They contribute nothing but corruption, disease, and they live off other people's productivity.
Absolutely. Hey, that's communism, and that's the disgusting system that all the whites of Southern Africa were prepared to go to war over. And here we are sitting being ruled by these people. But I watch as this country is falling apart and getting more unstable and so forth. It's absolutely sickening what's happened in this country. But it's sickening what's happened across all of Southern Africa.
Yes, and the whole of Africa. If you think that Africa was a paradise run in partnership with the Europeans, and before the decolonization began in 1960, Africa was so peaceful, you could travel in a normal car from Cape Town to Cairo across Africa, and you'd barely need even a passport, because it was all British-controlled territory, actually. And there were no roadblocks, and you didn't need to worry about protection because of a respect for law, a respect for life, and a respect for property. And nobody died of starvation. We had droughts. Of course we had droughts. But we never had famines because there was planning. And nobody starved to death in Rhodesia. I mean, that's a fact. And in fact, Rhodesia had the lowest unemployment in Africa, the highest literacy, the best economy in terms of the agriculture, and the black people were benefiting in Rhodesia more than they have in any other country in Africa. And that's a fact of history. But now you look and you can see tens of millions of people have died prematurely across Africa because of decolonization, because of destroying this excellent partnership that had been built up, very well illustrated in Rhodesia, where you had the white and the black working together, running a country under white leadership, and everyone benefited. The chiefs were respected, the communities worked well, and what you've got today is revolutionary chaos and just a crime syndicate where they are leeching everything out of the population, and people now are dying by the hundreds of thousands and the millions, if you look at the whole continent. This is a result of the First and Second World War, the Hundred Years' War, the war against white Christians, worldwide against Western civilization itself. And of course, Rhodesia and South Africa could try to hold up and be a bulwark and stand, and that's why we were targeted for so much vindictiveness.
Yes, absolutely. There are many of those things that we need to come back and visit, this whole business of World War I and World War II being the same war, and it's all just been a war to take down the Germans at the end of the day. Yes. Now, Peter, here in South Africa, a thing that's been in the news quite a bit and a thing that's concerning me a lot has been this talk of a bill which is basically a new form of censorship. And from what I've been picking up, these are draconian rules, absolutely of the worst kind. One of my friends who watches Europe a lot, he was saying that these are draconian laws. They are as bad as the kinds of laws that have been forced down the Germans' throats in Germany by the Jews, so as to shut up any German who even dares to say or think or question anything, including their sacred Holocaust. And I've been very concerned by what I've been hearing about these laws. Is there anything that you can enlighten me on?
I can indeed. I've been to a number of meetings, including where the Deputy Minister of Justice, John Jeffrey, addressed us on the very specific subject of the hate speech provisions in the bill. And it was absolutely intriguing. I was at this meeting on the 15th of February in Cape Town, where the Deputy Minister of Justice, John Jeffrey, a Jewish member of the Southern Communist Party, who's in the department, been the one involved the whole way along with the process, and he addressed us, and we had over an hour opportunity, myself and other ministers and so on in Cape Town, to question him on its implications. So one of the first questions that we asked was, who has sponsored this bill? Where did this bill come from? Whose idea is it? Is this an ANC bill? And immediately he responded, no, that's a lie. It's a lie to call it an ANC bill. So we said, well, where did it come from? Who suggested it? And he said, oh, it was from social groups. It was outside independent social groups. So the next question was, which groups? His answer, the Jewish Board of Deputies and the LGBTQ lobby. And that was it, full stop. The Jewish Board of Deputies and the LGBTQ lobby. And from that, they produced this hate speech bill, which is now wanting to be put through Parliament to silence people who say anything that the powers that be don't like.
You kid me. So it's the Jewish Board of Deputies, the highest Jewish organization in South Africa, is behind this thing, and the LGBT groups.
Yes, that is correct. And of course, I'd say they work together hand in hand, along with the Southern Communist Party, who's controlled the ANC since the 1950s at least. And I mean, we can see this. Some of the key people in the ANC, right from the early 50s, was Jewish Russian communists like Ronnie Kashuls and Joe Slovo, and several others, you'd know the names. And these people have been controlling the ANC. The ANC has basically been run by white Jewish communists, mostly from Russia, have been running the show. And then the homosexual lobbies got in. And so basically, the black faces you see in front of the ANC are in many ways the front men and the puppets. The people behind the scenes who are controlling the ANC are the Southern Communist Party, who are almost entirely a Jewish operation.
Is that true even now?
That is true even now. That is correct. You can see that even with the EFF, it's quite interesting that there's no doubt that the people who are controlling the EFF are the same people who are controlling Mandela and Mbeki. For example, Lord Renwick in England, he is seen regularly with this EFF leader, Julius Malema. Julius Malema goes to London regularly to get his orders from Lord Renwick, who is the same man who was the British controller for Nelson Mandela before he became president, and afterwards too. And Lord Renwick is, of course, part of the whole banking groups, completely Jewish controlled, and he's one of the control people. The EFF came out of the ANC, and it looks like it's as meaningful an opposition as the anti-communist, royalist, monarchist groups that were proliferating in Europe in the 1920s and 30s, all started by the Cheka, later the NKVD or the KGB, where the communists started up anti-communist groups and monarchist groups to control and neutralize opposition that knew was coming. And so, as we know, the National Party got the AWB up and running. They got one of their security sergeants, that was Eugene Tabanche, and I was told by the head of military intelligence himself, that's General Major General Timmy Frenevold, that Eugene Tabanche was an operative for the security branch, and he was asked to set up this group with neo-Nazi images in order to attract people who they knew would be opposing National Party policies coming up in order to neutralize it, which is why everything the AWB and the Estergada tried to set up were neutralized, and they were arrested and they were blown apart before they could do anything significant, because the head of it was already organized and reporting back to the same government.
You know, that's interesting, because I'd heard rumors along those lines. Monica Stone had said something along the same lines to me, and I wasn't sure how significant it was. I did meet Tini Groenewald once, and we discussed South Africa, and I put some of the details into my book, Government by Deception. But what you're telling me about Eugene Tabanche is very interesting indeed, and it's a sad fact. It's a sad fact that whites neutralize whites, and that is a worldwide thing. I can see the Americans, the white Americans are struggling, the British are struggling, everybody's struggling to get a white nationalist, white right-wing, anti-communist group going, and nobody can get a proper thing off the ground. And this is a very interesting thing that you've now told me about that.
Well, yes, in fact, I saw a fascinating film on the Oklahoma bombing back in 1995. There's an excellent film called A Noble Lie, and it's over 2 hours, incredibly convincing documentation, very thorough, and it shows, amongst other things, that this group that the man who's blamed for the Oklahoma bombing came from was almost entirely made up of government agencies, from National Security Agency, CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, FBI, that you had these white supremacist groups, so-called, that were almost entirely made up, including the founder, would all be military intelligence and national intelligence and CIA operatives, right down to the chap who they blamed for it. He was a special forces chap who was assigned onto this. And you basically saw that a lot of the so-called anti-government groups that you'll see in America and so on, and South Africa, have been set up by the government in order to attract people who are genuine and, of course, betray them and neutralize them.
That is very shocking. But I've also been reaching that conclusion regarding the USA, because Monica Stone was living in the USA for quite a number of years, and she was closely involved with all the white nationalist groups there. And when she came back a few years ago, Monica said to me, every single white guy who's been taken down has been taken down through government sting operations. They're all being taken down on the most bogus of charges. And the most glaring example that I can think of, Alex Linda and I did a show about a guy called Matt Hale. And Matt Hale got a 40-year jail sentence, 20 years of which was slapped on for, quote, terrorism. That guy never lifted a finger to anybody. The entire setup was completely just where somebody entrapped him, and they even did it wrong. They didn't even get any real data, and it was just on something that he said or put in an email. And this guy went straight to jail for a 40-year jail sentence. And he's not committed an actual crime. He's not harmed anyone. He's not threatened to do anything. But in America, it looks like they are just taking people down left, right, and center. And they're just setting people up and destroying them.
That is definitely correct. And so this is where this new hate speech bill comes in, which is so important for them. Because we've got a fairly good Bill of Rights guaranteeing freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of association, freedom of opinion, all these sort of things, which is good. But what they're trying to do is have a bill called a hate speech bill. And I mean, who would be against hate? And then this is a new way of being able to put people away if they disagree with the government. So if you go back into history, go back to the Middle Ages, for example, the way they got rid of people, if they were in the church, you accused them of heresy. If they were in the state, you accused them of treason. And so you either got burned at the stake or had your head chopped off, but basically heresy or treason was a death sentence for most of history. Now that changed because of the Reformation and getting freedom of conscience, freedom of thought, freedom of association, which are good things. Most people have assumed that freedom requires freedom of thought and freedom of opinion, freedom of the press, you would think. But now, in the name of hate speech bill, you're seeing liberals who used to say they were for freedom of speech. Now they're opposing freedom of speech, but they can't say we're against freedom of speech. So the way they've gone about it is they're calling it hate speech. Now, hate speech suggests that you understand a person's motivation, whereas the law courts have tended to deal with what people have done, not their motivation. So if you go back to the first crime in history, Adam and Eve in the garden, God didn't say, why have you done this? He asked, what have you done? The question is what? The why is irrelevant because, you know, you can come up with your mommy dropped your dummy when you were small and you suffered irreparable psychological damage and it's the fault of your teacher and it's the fault of the policeman and whatever. And the why and your excuses and all that is irrelevant. The good judge is only meant to look at the law and what you did. Now, whether a black person was killed by a white person or by a black person, or whether a white person was killed by a black person or a white person, who did it and why they did it is not as important as what they did. I mean, you're still dead. So a hate crime is nonsense. Every crime is a hate crime in a sense. And the idea that, oh, if a black person is killed by a white person, it's more serious than if he's killed by a black person. But that is nonsense because you don't know the motivation of people. The law should deal with what you did, not why you did it. But now, hate speech gets you into a whole new frame of things where, and we tackled this so-called Deputy Minister of Justice, Mr. Jeffrey, who determines what is hate speech? And basically, what he said is, it is determined by the person who feels offended. So if the person says, well, I perceived I was hurt because of what you said, it's nobody is even suggesting my intention was to hurt them, but they perceived it that way, and they are going to allow a subjective determination on what the victim claimed to have felt rather than an objective reality of what was done or what was intended. And that is a new way of shouting treason or heresy and being able to get you burned at the stake or head chopped off, modern equivalent, roasted in public opinion, lose your job, lose your money, get sued, get in jail, whatever they want to do with you. But basically the hate speech is free speech that the political left don't like.
Man, this is an interesting thing. You know, I think it was Dr. William Pierce in America. He mentioned that in the 1990s under Bill Clinton, they were starting their hate speech laws back then as well. And I think that was also a Jew-driven thing over there. But this business of who feels hurt, I mean, that just opens up a can of worms. It can be you and I could come up with anything that we feel aggrieved about, and we would now accuse someone of that. But most of the time anyway, as like with anti-Semitism, it's that law is actually going to be exploited by only one group, actually, despite the name.
You know the origin of the term racist?
Yeah, wasn't that Trotsky?
That's correct. Leonid Trotsky, the head of the Red Army in the Soviet Union, came up with the term racist in order to shut up any opposition to the communist revolution or communism or the Soviet Union or the Communist Party in the Soviet Union. Because, as was well pointed out by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, he said, what we call a Russian revolution was nothing of the sort. It wasn't a Russian revolution. That's an insult to its victims. It was an anti-Russian revolution. And he said, Russians were the victims and we died by the millions. In fact, everyone talks, as he said, about the 6 million Jews supposedly killed by the Nazis, but who speaks about the 66 million Christians killed by the Jews? Yes. And what he's talking about is the Soviet Union was a creation of the Jewish Bolshevik Party. That's why they call it the Bolshevik Revolution, not the Russian Revolution. The Russians were the victims of the Bolsheviks, and the Bolsheviks were mostly, as in something in the region of, if you took the 800 top communist leaders in the Soviet Union at the time of the revolution, in the 780s out of 800 were Jews. So it was a mostly Jewish. We're not saying every Jew was a communist. We're not even saying every communist was a Jew, but the vast majority of the leadership of the Soviet Union, the Politburo, and every single group, especially the Cheka, Dzerzhinsky, who started the Cheka, which morphed into the NKVD and the KGB, Beria, all of these folks from Lenin was half Jewish, Stalin was half Jewish, Trotsky was completely, and so on. The leadership was overwhelmingly Jewish, and it was the Jewish Cheka who were murdering the Christians and the leadership of Russia. And that's why Russians like Alexander Solzhenitsyn are furious that we call this anti-Russian revolution the Russian Revolution. He said it's an insult to the victims. And then he said the reason why most people in the world are ignorant of what happened in the Soviet Union, the 66 million Christians killed by the Jews in Russia, is because the Western media is in the hands of the perpetrators.
Yes, yes, it's true. You know, they lie so much, and the Western media is the biggest lying machine that's out there. I don't know if you know about the book that Solzhenitsyn wrote, 200 Years Together.
Yes, I'm aware of it. It's very important, but it's been suppressed.
Absolutely. And not one publisher in the entire English-speaking world wanted to touch that book. And that is because it's the Jews in control of the publishing. And it's astounding that they can get away with that unbelievable murder in the Soviet Union, and yet you hear no end to the supposed 6 million Jews who died. And you know, I heard from a friend that even here in Durban is a Holocaust museum, which I don't know why we need such a thing here. And of course, the other point that comes up is, you know, why should South African school children even have to hear about this story when there are other things that are much more important? And of course, like you say, what about the other 66 million that we don't hear about?
Well, in fact, I've got an interesting anecdote about this Holocaust Museum. We've got one in Cape Town as well. And while I've homeschooled my children for 10 years, when my wife got cancer, we put our younger son to the local independent Christian school. The next thing, I get a letter requiring permission for my son to go to the Holocaust Museum downtown Cape Town. Now, I responded immediately saying, may I go with? And I got a quick answer back, no. I want to know, why can't I go with as a parent? And I was told, the Holocaust Museum doesn't allow parents to come with school groups. My next question is, why not? And the answer was, because the parents ask questions. So I thought, well, that's intriguing. So I said to my son, okay, do you want to go? And he said no. And I said, well, I'll do you a deal. I'll show you on my computer all the pictures they're going to show you and the pictures they won't show you. And I'll give you in half an hour a summary of what they're going to take 3 hours to waste your time on. And would you like that? And he said, yep. No, he took that. He thought that was a deal. And I went through it and later asked him what his friends thought. And they said, oh, they wish their dads had freed them from this. It was deathly boring, and they couldn't stand this so-called Holocaust survivor full of hatred, just spewed out garbage. And I went to the principal to speak about it and asked the principal if he had been. And he said, yes, he had been forced to go when he was in teacher training. I said, what did you think of it? And he said, well, to be honest, I was bored. And I said, anything else? And he said, well, this Holocaust survivor we had to listen to was really just spewing venom. And I said, well, that's interesting. With my daughter, who's studying at a Christian university in America, or did, she was forced to do Holocaust studies. That was a compulsory subject at the college, a Christian university. And she was so furious, and all of her friends got so sick to death of it, because they had one of these fat Jewish survivors, so-called, who just spewed out hate the whole time for Christianity. And this had a Christian...
Well, and Christians as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let me tell you, I've been to the Holocaust Museum in America, in Washington, D.C., and I've been to the one that's slipped in under the Imperial War Museum in London, England. So let me deal with the U.S. one first. A good friend of mine, a U.S. Air Force general, who's a top scientist who, in fact, launched everything from button batteries, lasers from the 50s already, through to precision-guided weapons, tomahawks, cruise missiles, and so on. General Ben Parton, a brilliant scientist who's a top weapons specialist. And he's the first one who said to me that, you know, the whole Holocaust was nothing but a hoax that's gone out of control since wartime propaganda. And he gave me scientific proof, including U.S. Air Force photographs taken from the top during the war, Auschwitz. And you can see there plainly that buildings that take you to today as gas chambers weren't even there in 1944. But still, going back to this museum, he wanted me to go to this Holocaust museum that had just opened downtown in D.C. So we went along there, and I asked to see the museum director, Holocaust Museum, Washington, D.C. I introduced myself, Dr. Peter Hammond, missionary, Frontline Fellowship, South Africa. I've just returned from Rwanda. I was an eyewitness to the Rwandan Holocaust. I've got here my book, Holocaust in Rwanda. I've got on this disc a whole lot of photographs, including high resolution that you can blow up to be pictures filling the wall. And he said, we don't deal with the Rwandan Holocaust. I said, I thought you're the Holocaust Museum. Well, this guy got up from behind his table quite angry. Yeah, that's racist to refer to what happened in Rwanda as a Holocaust. I said, well, they were throwing people alive into burning pits. I mean, what more do you have to do to be called a Holocaust? They were trying to wipe out every Tutsi Protestant in Rwanda. And so now he's trying to escort me to the door. And I said, don't you deal with the Holocaust in Cambodia or the killing fields of Mozambique? And now he's getting really angry and he's calling security. Wow. And I said, don't you deal with the abortion Holocaust going on in your own country? Now he started to swear at me. As I was being whisked out, and I'm sorry I didn't get a picture of it because I was being manhandled at this stage along with the general to get out of this place, I saw on the wall, big and bold, written into concrete,
yeah,
anti-Semitism began with the birth of Jesus Christ.
Oh, wow.
Can't believe they're blaming Jesus Christ for what Leonid Trotsky invented in order to suppress criticism of the Bolshevik Revolution.
Now, this is interesting. I didn't know that the Jews were openly that much against the Christian religion at these Holocaust museums. Very, very interesting.
I can add another one. When I went to London, I went in 2014 for the 100th anniversary of the First World War. And I had lectures in Britain. Highlight was going to the Imperial War Museum, a really great war museum.
Yeah.
And who would have guessed they've got a wing there that's a Holocaust museum, just attached. So you don't think you're going to a Holocaust museum, but suddenly there's this whole section. And what I see at the beginning first, and just in case you're blind and can't read what's on the wall, they've got it going audibly at the same time. Anti-Semitism began with the Protestant Reformation under Martin Luther.
Are you serious? So they even blame Martin Luther?
Yes. So here I've got Jesus Christ and Martin Luther. I mean, how clear is it? They're attacking Christians. They're attacking Christianity on every level. Because if you're going back to and this, when you look at Hollywood,
yeah,
how many? I believe that Joseph Goebbels and the Third Reich made two anti-Jewish films, like The Eternal Jew. But the Jews have made thousands of anti-German films and anti-films.
Unbelievable numbers.
And how many films use the name of Jesus Christ as a swear word, often wrapped around with the most vulgar terminology? And this shows that at the heart of the anti-Christian movement is a hatred for Christ. And you can see this in Hollywood. And so what amazes me is how many Christians have time and patience for Hollywood and the media, which is obviously run by people who despise Christ. And the most hated person in history is probably Jesus Christ, at least as far as Hollywood seems to be concerned, because they don't seem to take the name of Muhammad or Buddha or Krishna or Lenin or Marx, but regularly the attacks on Christ. And the amazing thing is how they've managed to enlist millions of American Christians to support the state of Israel, a secular state in the Middle East that legalizes abortion, pornography, homosexuality, conscripts women into the military, and so on. And yet there's a lot of Christians who think you can never criticize Israel, even though the Bible is full of criticisms of Israel. It seems extraordinary to me that we have so many millions of Christians worldwide who've made an idol of the Jews and of Israel, because I don't see that justified in the Bible. first of all, that Jesus says anything actually good about the Jews or that they say anything good about him. And Martin Luther published a book on the Jews and their lies where he dealt with the Jewish slander against Jesus Christ in the Bible and what Jesus said about them and what he had himself witnessed. And you don't get anything in the Bible that actually would give you the impression that we're meant to give a blank check to anyone, let alone the Jews. And yet today you've got many Americans who know that the media hates us, hates Christians, know that the media slanders and blasphemes Christ, knows that the media supports everything against our principles like abortion, pornography, prostitution, gambling, through to the homosexual pink agenda, the whole lot. And yet they believe you've got to support the state of Israel, even though the state of Israel rejects Christ and forbids missionary work amongst the Jews, and which, in fact, legalized abortion, pornography, homosexuality, and gambling. Homosexual groups have said that Tel Aviv is the most gay-friendly city in the world. How many men want their daughters conscripted? But in Israel, the state of Israel in the Middle East right now, they conscript women. Young girls get conscripted in the army. And that is not a good idea. As a man who's got two daughters, I couldn't imagine it. And yet there are Christians who believe you cannot criticize Israel or the Jews, and yet the Jews are supporting not just running most of the pornography industry, but they're supporting how many films that include blasphemy against Christ and are against all of our values. So what's happened is that the very control of the news media, the entertainment industry, and the educational institution has brainwashed a lot of people to even support their most dedicated enemies.
Yes. You know, these Jews have such a hatred also not just for whites, but for Germans in particular. And I used to have a Jewish friend that I used to speak to very regularly. I actually had many Jewish friends. I even had Jewish friends in Israel. And whenever I spoke to my Jewish friend about Europe, then I'd say to him, you know, don't you think those white people in Europe, the Germans or the French or whoever, they're doing such a great thing about this? And that is where I started picking up two hatreds. The one is a hatred of white people, and the other one is a hatred of Christians. And the Jews will continuously go on about, oh, the Christians did this, and the Christians did that, and the whites did this, and the whites did that. But they spew their hatred, but they don't want you to say even one word, not one word of criticism about them, even when they are lying through their teeth.
It's true, and I don't know if you've noticed how many American Christians have the term Judeo-Christian, and they speak about the Judeo-Christian worldview, our Judeo-Christian civilization, and so on. And I've had to point out, but that's an oxymoron. It's a contradiction in terms. You can't speak of a Judeo-Christian because Judaism rejects Christ. So Christianity is centered on Christ as the Messiah, and Judaism rejects him as the Messiah. So how can you have a Judeo-Christian anything? And this is the kind of high-level slander. And if you get people to just focus on the Bible, so where did Jesus say you've got to support the Jews? Well, I'll tell you why they hate Martin Luther, and why they hate the Germans, and why they hate the whites in the West, because of how much Christianity was there. Martin Luther is someone who really, really tried to reach his Jewish neighbors, and he tried to befriend them. He tried everything he could to help the Jews, and he got stabbed in the back so much that in the end, at the end of his life, he wrote at age 63, his last book was on the Jews and their lies, which you can look almost anywhere, and it's hard to find. And your website's about the only place you can find it, because this has been suppressed. But what did Martin Luther say? He said what Jesus said. And Jesus said, you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. You don't know me or my Father. If you knew me, then you would have known my Father also. But you reject me, therefore you reject my Father. He called them hypocrites. You devour widows' houses. You make a pretense of long prayers. You will receive the greatest condemnation. You are twice as worthy of hell. You are blind guides. You are fools and blind. This is what Jesus said to the religious leaders. You can go from one end of the Gospels to the other, all four. And what do you get Jesus saying? You have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. You are full of extortion and self-indulgence. You are like whitewashed tombs, full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. How can you escape the condemnation of hell? You are the sons of those who murdered the prophets, you brood of vipers. You honor me with your lips, but your heart is far from me. In vain you worship me, teaching us doctrines, the commandments of men. I'm quoting every word here is from the gospel, and you'll get it in the Lutheran. Take heed of the leaven of the Pharisees. O faithless generation, let no one eat fruit from you ever again. The fig tree which represents Israel, he cursed and withered away and said, may no one ever eat fruit from you again. It says that the Jews knew that Jesus had spoken these parables against them. And Jesus said, you are mistaken because you do not know the scriptures, nor do you know the power of God. You make a pretense of long prayers. You will receive the greater condemnation. You are a synagogue of Satan. And again, Jesus used the word synagogue of Satan.
Yes.
Now, who else used the synagogue?
Only they.
And this is even in the last book of the Bible in Revelation, the synagogue of Satan are condemned. So how do you get these Christians having an irrational, unconditional support for Jews in Israel? You can't sustain it from the New Testament.
Yeah. Well, you know, Peter, this thing of the Jews, them covering up all their crimes, but they were quick to focus on anybody else, on the German, on the whites, on the Christians, and they spew forward their hate in such volume. And, you know, even like these Holocaust museums, I've studied some of these other videos where these so-called Holocaust survivors are carefully questioned, and, you know, those people are telling so many lies, but let's not go into that. But these Jews want to push their line, regardless of its lack of evidence, and the moment any one of us wants to criticize the slightest thing, they want us shut up. And aren't these the same people who were helping the hippies and the communists in the 60s, and they were saying, oh, freedom of expression means you can burn the American flag, you know, we need freedom of expression. But now that white people want to have their little bit of freedom of expression in their minor way on the internet and stuff, now all of a sudden they want laws to shut us up. And is there any other information you know about the Jewish Board of Deputies and any of their other motivations or things that they've said regarding this? Why they're pushing this thing?
Yes. I mean, for example, they were also heavily on removing our old censorship laws that were against pornography. And you know that's why? Because the vast majority of people controlling the pornography industry are Jews, over 90-something percent in both America and in our country. And there are people, you will find them on the internet, these Jewish people who openly say, these are people who run pornography industry, saying, we are using pornography to defile Christian civilization, to defile Christianity, so that we can, not to use their words, but effectively sodomize your daughters and your sons, and they want to debase them, and especially they've pushed out of all proportion interracial pornography, because it's their goal to particularly debase white girls. And this is a desire, and they particularly focus on not just whites, but German girls. There's a very, very strong...
To
debase German girls, and they do it by many ways. They use drugs, they use money, they use everything they can. In some cases, just literally white slave traffic, where they've kidnapped some girls who are backpacking around, and then they get them on drugs, and they get them into these porno things. But the idea of debasing the whites and the West and the Germans, and you can see there's a hatred for whites, there's a hatred for Europeans, there's a hatred for the Anglo-Saxons, there's a special hatred for the Germans, because that's where much of Christianity came from. And their hatred for Martin Luther is intense, but the greatest hatred of all is for Jesus Christ. And you think of films like The Last Temptation of Christ and others, which Jews have made from Hollywood against Christ. And when a Roman Catholic man like Mel Gibson wants to bring a film honoring Christ, they all boycotted him, hated him, wouldn't allow his films to be shown in the cinemas, absolutely poured the venom on poor Mel Gibson, especially because Mel Gibson's dad questions the stats and the details of the Holocaust, and Mel Gibson supported his father and would not criticize his dad. And so the hatred for Mel Gibson, the only film you love to make Christ is when Jesus Christ is portrayed as a fornicating whoremonger or coward who's having an affair with Mary Magdalene or something. Now, that's acceptable. Last Temptation of Christ, I think. But you can't have a film that's respectful in Christ like Mel Gibson's. And so you see, at the heart of this, they hate Christ. And what bothers me as a Christian is how many Christians out there are supporting people who hate Christ. And let's face it, through all of history, Christians have been negative towards Jews. Not Jews who've converted to Christ. I mean, a Jew who converts to Christ, he's a brother. That's not a problem. But a Jew who continues to reject Christ, he supports the crucifixion of Christ. And many of the people who are giving rabbinic teaching today are saying that Jesus today has been boiled in excrement in hell, and yes, he is whore, son of this whore Mary, and so on. And to any Christian, this has got to be deeply disturbing, to have our Lord and Savior, someone who we esteem higher than all, treated in such a disrespectful, blasphemous way by these people. But imagine their delight that they've gotten a whole lot of Christians and their children to become their main cheerleaders and unquestioning idolatrous servants.
It's terrible what they're doing in America, and it looks like the American Christians, large numbers of them controlled by their priests, looks as if they are falling for this big time. Although my particular friends, I've got lots of friends who are awake to the Jewish issue. And I'll tell you something, a little story, is that some of our white fellows who understand the war between the Jews and the whites, some of them, like my friend Alex Linder, who's an atheist. Alex Linder told me he never goes to a movie, he boycotts all these movies, but he said that when Mel Gibson's Passion of Christ was shown, he went to watch it because he stood up. He thought it was a strike to stand up for Mel Gibson, because Mel is standing up for the truth. But unfortunately, there are too few people who have the guts of Mel Gibson. And yeah, but we're all in this together. Doesn't matter whether you're white, whether you're Christian, they hate you for both. They hate you for both.
They do indeed. And, you know, we may think that if we would just smear honey around their mouths and run around and kiss the feet of sand, then everything will be fine. But no, they hate you even more. And so I think there is, even in the worst anti-Christian communist out there, they respect a Christian who's got some backbone. They despise the ones who bow to them and who repeat all their lies. And those people think they're going to earn the support and loyalty of the Jews by supporting them. They're not, because there's nothing they respect more than strength. There's nothing they despise more than weakness.
Now you're talking. We've been talking about that, me and my white friends, about the need for white people everywhere to start standing up and showing their strength and showing their determination and their displeasure. Because if we don't do that, we're going to be gone, because things are looking really bad for us. And those who are following the Jewish liberal communist types of views, you can see that it's just leading to our extermination.
Yes. To illustrate that, let me give you this insight. The first World Missions Conference was held in 1910. And I happened to be at the one in 2010 Cape Town, so that was on the centenary. And I, being a historian, was interested to compare the Edinburgh Missions Conference in 1910 with the Cape Town Missions Conference of 2010. And what did I notice? First of all, in 1910, the percentage of Europeans to the world population was 36%. Europeans made up 36% of the world's population in 1910. Today, 9%. We've gone from 36% to 9% in one century. You see why I call it the Hundred Years' War. Absolutely. It's been a war against Western Christian civilization. How have they taken... In 1910, Christians ruled the world, European Christians, with the exception of Japan, which was strong, China, which was not, and the Ottoman Empire, which was falling apart. The rest of the world was ruled either by Orthodox Christians, like in Russia, Protestant Christians like Germany and Britain and America, or Catholic Christians like Austria and France and so on. So Christians ruled the world, and that included Africa, South America, Asia, the whole lot. And now there's probably not one country in the world that you can call truly Christian anymore. And those that are being invaded in a demographic disaster that's going to see whites extinct or genocided before the end of the century. And so what we've seen since, if you can just look back to 1910, I mean, that's not that long ago. Some of our grandparents were alive then. And to see how did they take the greatest, most powerful, politically, economically, militarily, spiritually, in every way, continent, and turn it into now in danger of becoming Eurasia. First of all, by getting them to fight one another in the First World War, which is another story. We've got more to speak about that. The Second World War really crushed the Soviet Union, the communist world, and then the rise of America and the Soviet Union at the expense of Europe. And then, of course, the whole decolonization disaster, which left Africa as a killing field for these, which has been a catastrophe. And so all of this, oh, and of course you've got to go along with family planning, lots of abortions, lots of lies about overpopulation, and then while you're giving all kinds of aid to the unproductive nations and those who are easily manipulable by politicians, you are having birth control, sterilizations, and homosexual agenda in the Western nations.
Yes.
Back in the days of Paul Kruger, if you go to Paul Kruger's house, Paul Kruger had 17 children and he had 144 grandchildren at one of his birthdays. So you think of the Boers, the average Boer woman was having 12 children at the time of the war. That's why Stephen Mitford Goodson, who's done a documentation on the Rothschilds and the role in the genocide of the Boers in Anglo-Boer War in 1909-1902, taking those Boer women and children and killing them in those camps where a quarter were dying every year. So literally, in 4 years, there wouldn't have been one person left because every year, out of every 1,000, 250 were dying. That's documentation of Emily Hofhaus. And so we lost so many women and children at a critical stage of our life. And if you go to the Anglo-Boer War Museum in Bloemfontein, by the way, they've got every name of everyone who died in the camps and when and where, and it's, which they can't give you for the so-called Holocaust in Europe. They've only got 117,000 names. But in the Anglo-Boer War Museum, they've got every one of those 32,000 who died in the Anglo-Boer War on the women and children's side, on the walls, all the details. And that meant that instead of the white Afrikaner being the majority in South Africa, it would have been more than the Zulus and Xhosa combined. We could have had one man, one vote, and still run our own country like Australia, so I think, or Canada. But because of the Rothschilds' plan to genocide the Boers, which is well documented, which they implemented in camps, and they weren't facing aerial bombardment and a hostile group destroying the railways and so on. The British controlled the railways. They controlled the harbors, and they still starved the people to death in those camps. What they did was more genocide against the Boers than anything that's ever been done about the Jews. There's less than there are Jews today. And why? We lost our country because the Anglo-Boer War, a goal of the Rothschilds, a goal of the bankers, we had our farms over the gold mines and diamond mines, and they wanted it, and they wanted the Boers gone, and it was an anti-Christian agenda. I really encourage you to get Stephen Mitford Goodson on sometime to talk about genocide.
I definitely want to, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where we are. You can see why are we in the mess we're in today. It's been a comprehensive war on many levels. It's been a psychological war waged through the entertainment industry and an information war through the news media, an education indoctrination war through the educational institutions, so-called. It's been a war of actual violence where they bomb cities or starve people to death, as in the case of the concentration camps in South Africa during the Anglo-Boer War. But it's also been promoting all kinds of lies, such as overpopulation and so on, to make sure that we have less children while they have more. And the end result is that our countries and cities and institutions can be hijacked.
Peter, that is something that people on my channel have brought up as well. And they were talking that in the 60s and 70s, they were encouraging white people across the world to have less children because of so-called overpopulation. But meanwhile, look who's feeding them. I mean, look at Zimbabwe, for example. Something like half the population would have starved to death just 10 years ago when Robert Mugabe drove all the white farmers off the land. And who saved them? The Western world has been feeding them. And another friend of mine in a neighboring country, he has other connections, and he was telling me that millions and millions of tons of maize are being brought in from various places or shuffled around to keep all these black people in the neighboring states alive who would otherwise have died from famine. And this kind of stuff is going on even now. And he would say to me, there's so many millions of tons of maize sitting in Mozambique, and they've got to give so much to here and there, and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, when the Rhodesian column went in 1890, there were less than 100,000 black people in the whole of Zimbabwe. And today there's over 10 million. That's no way to run a genocide. Under the whites, the blacks didn't just double, quadruple. They tripled their life expectancy. They multiplied so much that, in fact, the whites have increased the numbers of the black people, but the Jews have decreased the numbers of the white people. At the same time as we've been helping our black neighbors, we've had the Jews seeing that we are sterilized, aborted, or distracted. And notice how the destruction of the economy. When I grew up, the average mother was at home raising children, and they had large families. But today, it's almost impossible because of the taxation burden and also the inflation, and they're forcing women to get out of the home and into the workplace, which means more men are unemployed too, of course. But the goal is that there's less white children being born. That is part of the genocidal goal.
Everything that I've studied and seen about liberalism, if you look at it closely, regardless of the bogus arguments, if you look at what they are telling you to do, every single aspect of so-called liberalism is actually anti-white. Everything.
And there's a good reason for it. It's because not only are the whites historically Christian, but the whites historically have been reformers and have been thinkers and have been dissidents. So you'll have a white man who stands up and says, give me liberty or give me death, or my conscience is captured the word of God. Here I stand, I cannot do otherwise. And so we have produced these great reformers, these men like William Wilberforce, these great emancipators like David Livingston, people who rocked the boat, people who continue. And this is the dynamism of Western civilization, that it's had great reformers like the Calvins and the Luthers and the Tyndales and the Zwinglis, and it's had these great political leaders who wouldn't align with any side, like William Wilberforce, stood on principle. And you don't get that amongst the others. The other races tend to be, they follow their leader. I mean, you try and find amongst the Arabs or amongst the blacks someone like William Wilberforce, Martin Luther, or David Livingston. You can't. They don't have Ian Smith or someone who's going to, or H.F. Hood, who's going to go against the whole world and say, this is the right thing and we're going to do it no matter what. And the New World Order hates the independent spirit of this reformer who will stand up and say, you're all wrong.
Peter, look at ourselves. Look at us few whites here in Africa, the Boers and the Rhodesians. We were rebels. We stood our ground. Look at these blacks who've come to power since. They all just do their little job that they have to do. They will never reform or stand up for anything that has any real value. You're quite right. The whites are not only the people who bring change, but they can be the biggest rebels of all. And if you look at Germany, for example, Protestant Germany was a country that allowed Jews to go there. For hundreds of years, Germany was a refuge where Jews could go because the Germans treated them so well. And then when eventually one man realizes, good Lord, these people are destroying our nation, because the goal of the Jews was to turn Germany into Soviet Union number two. And here is a guy, Adolf Hitler, and he says, goodness me, you people are destroying us. This is Jewish communism. This is Bolshevism. You are forcing this down our throats, causing war, civil war inside Germany, where one German kills another. So here's a guy like Adolf Hitler who dares to stand up and defend his country and his people from being turned into communist Jewish slaves. And look at how they attack those Germans just over this one guy eventually, after centuries of unbelievable kindness to these people. They now go after the Germans as if the Germans are the most evil people that ever lived. Absolute rubbish.
Yes, everything has context. And I remember I had a history teacher in Rhodesia, Mr. Rhys Davies, who is actually also a member of Parliament in Rhodesia. And he said, my first history session in high school in Rhodesia, Milton High School, he said, beware the victor's version. Wartime propaganda morphs into peacetime textbooks. He said, never accept the textbook version. Think outside the box. Ask why. And one of the things he asked us to ask why is, why was Hitler against the Jews? What had happened? Were the Germans taking away the jewelry and property of Jews, or were they taking back what had been stolen from widows and orphans of war widows and orphans of those who died in the First World War, in the banks stealing so much of the people's livelihood in the chaos that followed off the First World War? And he said, why was there resentment for them? You know, learn about the Balfour Declaration, learn about Lord Rothschild going to Lord Balfour and saying, you give us promise to get Palestine to make a Jewish state and we will get America in on the war to break the stalemate. And the Balfour Declaration is a fact. It's historic. It's unquestionable. It was paraded by the Jews themselves at the Versailles Treaty, which is the first time the Germans realized, oh, is that why America came in? Is this why our Jewish people, who we thought were
on our side,
were actually stabbing us in the back by negotiating with our enemies to bring the neutral Americans in to upset the whole balance of power in Europe, which changed all of history for the bad? So, you know, there's always a reason. And you can't just, for example, if you've seen the Dirty Harry movies, if you just showed a picture of this policeman shooting a man who's hobbling across the football field, you shoot him in the leg and then walk over and stand on his leg while he's screaming in agony. And, you know, if you just showed that clip, you'd say police brutality. But if you've seen the context of the film, you know, oh, but this man's a kidnapper and there's some girl who's dying of lack of oxygen in a confined space, and the policeman's concerned to get information to rescue this girl before she dies, then suddenly you realize, oh, it's not police brutality. It's the context makes all the difference. If you just show, as BBC did, some white policeman charging some black people in South Africa, you'd think apartheid racist oppression. But if you showed what happened a few minutes before, burning alive with a necklace murder some poor black town councillor, then you'd, oh, that's the context. Context is everything. You've always got to ask why.
And Peter, for me, my awakening to these Jews had to do with exactly that type of situation, the context. I'd always wondered, how was it that the Nazi Party arose? And I got a book written in England called The Birth of the Nazis. It was lauded by even the newspapers, and it was written in 2006. And I thought, oh, well, here's some English version of German history. So I won't be reading German propaganda. I'll be reading English, the English version of it. And I read this book. And then as I was going through the part about the 1919 and 1920 and all the communism that was coming to Germany, suddenly it hit me. You know, every single name that I'm seeing, 9 out of 10 communist names, is a Jew. And then I began to realize, goodness me, that is what Adolf Hitler had told us. He told us these Jews are communists, and here are these Jews inciting Germans to kill each other. And when I was reading the book, Peter, it was a lot like listening to what the ANC was saying here in South Africa in the 80s. I was reading the same type of statements from Jews, and now you could see, you know what? Nothing has changed. They're just doing the same thing in another country. And then I began to realize that, you know what? This Jewish issue, this is a very serious thing, and it's a real world thing. It is very, very dangerous what these people have been doing. And the things they get up to, Alex Linder has done a series of audiobooks based on the Roman Catholic history of Europe. And he was telling me that basically you'll find out that the Jews do the same thing over and over again in different countries. And it's the same thing every time. They just start with their same nonsense and they carry out the same activities until the people can't take it anymore. But here in South Africa, these Jews who've been treated so well, now these Jews want to shut us up, hey?
Well, indeed. So there are five culture-carrying institutions which are critical. And the communists even teach these are the five you've got to take over. If you want to take over or change a country, you need the educational institutions, the news media, the entertainment industry, the religious institutions, and the political institutions. Now think, who controls our education system? Who is organizing the textbooks? Do you know, even in the lifetime of Karl Marx, his one daughter married Jutta, the man who started Jutta Books,
yes,
which produces most of the textbooks of the universities in South Africa comes from Jutta. In fact, this one daughter of Karl Marx is buried here in Cape Town. Who controls the entertainment industry? Who controls Hollywood? Who controls the news media that tell you all the news that's fit to print? Well, there's six men who control all the news media in America, you know, CNN and all this sort of thing. And five of the six are Jews, and the sixth one, Rupert Murdoch, is the most pro-Israel, pro-Jew of the lot, even though he's not one. And that's the news media. And then you go to the religious institutions. How many people in the churches believe their primary job is to support Israel and the Jews, even if they're bombing civilians and killing kids in Gaza? It doesn't matter. And who controls the political? Well, in our country, the ANC controls the political. But who controls the ANC? Southern Communist Party. Proof?
Yes.
Go onto the Southern Communist Party website, which I've done. And the Southern Communist Party website, which, by the way, enables you to buy linen baseball caps, linen T-shirts, and credit cards accepted, seems very capitalist. But they say the Communist Party of South Africa, the CPSA, is not putting up any candidate in the next election, but advise all Congress to vote for the ANC candidate.
Yes.
That means they control them. Now go onto the Communist Party USA website, which I've done.
Yeah.
And they said for the last two decades already, they've said the Communist Party USA is not putting up a candidate for the next presidential elections, but advises all Congress to vote for the Democratic Party candidate, which means they control the Democratic Party in America. And who controls the Communist Party? Well, we know the answer to all this. So basically, you've got a small party that controls big parties. We're not saying the Democratic Party in America or the ANC here are all communists, but the communists control them.
Yes.
And
yes.
The same with Hollywood. Not all the actors in Hollywood are Jews, but most of the producers and directors are, and most of the scriptwriters are. And so they make sure that all the rest are doing their bidding. They're the puppet masters, and the others are just dancing to their tune.
Well, Peter, if you go against their agenda, they will quietly filter you out. So rest assured that anyone who rises there, even if he's not Jewish, he's been carefully filtered out.
Yes.
So, Peter, you think that we're going to get this law in South Africa, or do you think they'll be able to stop it? What is the resistance to this law like?
I definitely believe that we can resist this and that we can win this one. And in fact, I found it very interesting. I've done a report on the threats to freedom of speech in South Africa that's on our website. And we challenged them. Steve Swartz, ACDP Member of Parliament, stood up and challenged us. John Jeffrey, Deputy Minister of Justice, saying, this is criminalizing free speech. And he says, our legal system's overwhelmed. Our legal system is not coping with real serious crimes like armed robberies, assaults, murders, and rapes. How can it be wise and helpful to swamp our courts even further with time-wasting, money-wasting intrusions into freedom of speech and religion? So then Mr. Jeffrey said, yeah, in the light of the wars of religion, it's necessary to implement the hate speech law. So at this, I just had to stand up and speak, and I said,
yeah,
it seems ironic to have a politician talk about wars of religion, which, after all, ended 350 years ago with the Peace of Westphalia in 1648. We have just come out of a century where secular humanist states, atheist states, socialist, communist states, have murdered over 119 million of their own citizens. The wars of religion, which ended so many centuries ago, pales into insignificance compared to the colossal body count of secular states, communist states, in our own lifetime.
Yes.
And I said, secular humanism has caused most of the wars and massacres in the 20th century, as documented by Professor R.J. Rummel in Death by Government and in the Black Book of Communism book, which documents from the archives of the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe itself, of over 100 million of their own citizens killed in peacetime, just between 1970 and 1991. And all this started with registering churches, restricting freedoms, and restricting freedom of speech of all. And then I said to this John Jeffrey, Deputy Minister of Justice, the hate speech bill, which threatens freedom of speech, restricts freedom of conscience and it erodes freedom of religion, because who determines what hate speech is? Are we to believe that a government which in the last 23 years has failed to deal with kill the Boer, kill the farmer songs?
Yes, yes.
And which have not only been incitements of violence, but have led to actually the brutal murder and torture of over 4,000 farmers in South Africa. Are we to believe that now you're seriously concerned with dealing with genuine hate speech and hate laws? Are you going to actually be dealing with the EFF and with millennials? Are you going to be dealing with what's taught in jihad on a Friday mosque? Are we to take this seriously? And I said, freedom of speech is not negotiable. Are we to accept from you that pornography is legally protected as free speech, that blasphemy is free speech, but now our sermons and our postings on social media are to be examined to see if something can be construed as offensive by subjective secularists? You've got a track record of harassing and prosecuting Christians. And in the past, rulers stifled dissent by accusing their critics of treason, and religious leaders silenced opposition by declaring critics to be heretics. But today, you are seeking to silence opposition by shouting hate speech. Well, freedom of speech is essential for any free society. And at this point, most of the delegates assembled applauded. Now, there hadn't been any applause at this meeting. It wasn't that kind of meeting.
Yeah,
so this
nice,
really set nice. John Jeffrey was very staggered, and he stuttered and he stammered. And at the end,
excellent,
the only reply he lamely gave was, I don't think it's constructive to try and compare who was responsible for the most deaths in the last century. And he said, let us just, some people died because of wars of religion. And, you know, the people literally laughed at him. And you could see he was already backtracking because he saw there's a lot of people who fed up. Oh, and you'd find this fascinating. He then tried to justify what they were doing, the hate speech laws. Do you know how?
No. Holocaust?
Exactly. He said, well, Germany's got laws criminalizing any question of the Holocaust.
God.
And he said that provides a legal precedent for what they're trying to do here. Can you imagine? So he says the Jewish Board of Deputies is the source of this bill, and Germany's laws, which have put 55,000 Germans, including an 87-year-old grandmother, for free speech, for just...
Yeah.
Now, truth does not fear investigation. Whatever happened to being innocent or proven guilty? Stifling debate and criminalizing dissent does not make for a free society. And so, after he spoke, there was a 4SA, Freedom of Religion SA advocate, Nadine Bardenhorst, also stood up and spoke well against it. So I think this poor man left punch drunk. Well, not that I feel sorry for him.
I hope he feels punch drunk. He needs to get that sort of reception more often. Now, it sounds like you did some excellent work there. And I'm glad to hear Christians standing up for this, because these people are just looking. All they're looking for is a reason to get people into jail. And it was Stalin, I think, in 1931. Stalin proudly said that anti-Semitism was punishable by death in the Soviet Union. And really, we really don't want to go down these kinds of tracks. It looks like these Jews will use any kind of trick to either shut you up. And I mean, look at the shameless way in which they get Germans into jail. I mean, there's Ernst Zundel. He was doing his thing in Canada. Next thing you know, even though he'd won a court case and done everything by the book, they had him chucked in jail. I think he spent almost 13 years in jail in Germany. And they've even put other women like Sylvia Stoltz. They've put her in jail. Her husband is in jail. It's unbelievable that these highly intelligent people, I mean, Sylvia Stoltz is a barrister. This is not just somebody off the street. She's a fine woman of great intellect and great courage. And look at what's happened to her and her husband. They've put, wasn't it one of those French professors also did a stint in jail? They're putting highly intellectual people in jail who are just talking in a rational manner. You cannot even discuss it rationally, and they want to just get you into jail. And I mean, Germany is a place where there's no free speech. I mean, Germany, as far as I'm concerned, lost its freedom in 1945, as did a huge chunk of Europe. And
it's pretty bad when pornography and perversion is legal, communism's legal, Satanism's legal, but free speech and freedom of conscience and questioning things, that lands you in jail. When they criminalize dissent, then you must know that you're being ruled by criminals.
And Peter, another thing that I've always found highly hypocritical, wherever you go, you'll find that Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto is open and free to be read by anybody in the public. But see how they've tried to shut up Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf. That thing is banned. Yet Karl Marx, whose ideology has resulted in the greatest murder in history, I mean, 66 million people in Russia, as you've said, more than 50 million in China, and that's just those two countries. Those two countries together have resulted in more deaths than both world wars combined. But you won't hear a peep about those countries. And the Jews will not say one word about the things that have happened in those countries, just as they don't say a word about Zimbabwe and Mugabe murdering 30,000 of his own people. Not a peep out of the Jews.
Yes, you can see who people are both by their friends and their enemies. And when you get a news media and entertainment industry who do not want to tackle communism or its atrocities, you must know that they're in league with them.
Yes, yes. Yeah, Peter, well, it's good news that you've actually brought me. You've given me some hope here, because I was seriously concerned about this hate speech thing and whether they're going to be able to ram this thing through and whether the ANC would even try to just do something with the EFF. And it's bothered me tremendously, like Malema. If they can't find Malema guilty of hate speech and inciting genocide of the whites, I mean, that guy was busy saying things for months on end in the media. The whole country could hear it. And yet the ANC doesn't even, you know, the courts and things hardly can come up with anything to punish him with. It's shocking, really.
And well, the reason is he's controlled by Lord Renwick, the same man who controlled Mandela. I mean, it's the thing. He goes to London to get his instructions from the banksters there.
You know, that is interesting. I had heard somebody else had brought up the topic of whether Malema actually gets Jewish money. And he named somebody in South Africa as well as also contributing. And yeah, it shocks me, you know, to see these hardcore commies. I mean, Malema goes to Zimbabwe, he talks to Mugabe, he comes back. There's a bunch of things there that bother me a lot. But yes, let's hope that we can stop the ANC.
Indeed. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. We've got to expose these people. And the fact that I think many of the people on the ground might sincerely think that they're fighting for justice or freedom or whatever. But if they realize they're just tools, they're just pawns in the hands of a manipulative group who have instigated world wars, toppling of countries, massacres, famines, if they could understand that they are just being pawns of an elite who are up there, top banksters, Freemasons and all, into their kind of devilish religion. And these people who, they probably think they're all fighting for black leaders or whatever. And to find out that the back of it is actually just some Jewish bankers manipulating them, and they're just tools for a new world order. I think that would disillusion many of the foot soldiers on the ground.
I agree. If only people knew how they were being manipulated. And I've come to realize that the Western mass media is just a propaganda organization. And it's more out of control than any government propaganda that you can imagine. These people just spew out hatred for their next target. If it wasn't Rhodesia, it was the Boers. And of course, nobody has been lied about more than the Germans. They've been, the amount of lies told about them is just beyond belief.
It is beyond belief, and the venom and also the outrageous charges just increase with every passing year. And this means something to me because I was born in 1960. My parents went through Second World War. I've got some interesting perspectives from them. But I was only born 15 years after that war. I've got a son born 19 years after the Rhodesian War. And, you know, when I think that the Rhodesian War is so close to me, but do you notice every year the atrocity stories against white South Africans, the South African Defense Force, what happened on the border, or what happened in Rhodesia, it just increases. And now I know how a German soldier must have felt in the Second World War to have we fought courageously on principle against communism. We were protecting people, all people, including Avambo civilians who were being threatened by the SWAPO terrorists. And now to hear them twist it and suggest that we were involved in some kind of hideous kind of attack and we were mistreating and oppressing people, which is a lie. And I've spoken to German veterans who fought in Eastern Front saying, we were fighting against communism. We were fighting for Europe. And I understand they were honorable people. But every year, they get denigrated in the media and in school textbooks as being evil and being accused of atrocities that the communists did, but it's been laid on the Germans. And now I see we in South Africa, every year, the atrocity stories get more because the further away they are from the event, the only way they can distract you from their crimes is to continue to come up with more outrageous lies about what their opposition have done. How does this ANC government justify the fact that they've failed on every level, that the economy is imploding, the fact is the rand was 2 rand to the dollar, even despite the wars and sanctions when Mandela took over, and now what is it, 13, 14, 15 rand?
Yeah.
Why? They've got to distract you. If a pickpocket wants to steal your money, he's got to distract you. And that's what we're seeing right now. They will tell you, well, the real problem is Cecil John Rhodes statue or the Jan van Riebeek statue. So a guy who died 100 years ago, if you can get rid of a statue, that'll solve your problems. And meanwhile, they're laughing while they're looting the country because you've got a bunch of students so stupid that they really think some stone statue of someone who died 100 years ago is the real problem for the problems in our country today.
Again, that anti-white agenda, that hatred of white people.
Yes.
Well, Peter, it's been awesome having you on my channel. I'd like to have you back. There's a lot we need to talk about. I'd actually been hoping to talk about other things, but this was way too important because I think you're the first guys come forward to point out that the Jews are wanting to censor us here in South Africa, the Jewish Board of Deputies. Can you believe the highest agency of the Jews in the country? Busy secretly arranging hate speech and jail sentences for whites in South Africa. So that's something people need to hear. Thank you very much for that.
That's what an ANC Deputy Minister of Justice told us, straight from the horse's mouth. John Jeffrey said it, and I was astounded that he is that open.
Well, I can tell you that is very interesting because I've never heard this from anybody. And so it shows it's awesome that you guys, that you and other people were attending these sessions, because if you didn't do that, we wouldn't know about it. Of course, we can never expect to hear this either through the state media or the SABC or any of our newspapers. So thank goodness that people like you care enough and you went there to attend this and you fought for us. Thank you very much, Peter. That means a lot.
And thank you for organizing alternative media, because let's face it, the mainstream media is the lamestream media, and it's just a propaganda indoctrination setup. We need to support social media, websites, independent Christian radio, and conservative talk shows, TV, videos online. It's the social media that beat the mainstream media in America, enabled Donald Trump to win, and it's the social media that's enabling Geert Wilders in Holland and Marine and Marine Le Pen of the National Front in France and many others to get a voice into an area that's been dominated for too long by this cabal of enemies of free speech. So let's keep investing in the independent alternative media.
Well, Peter, we definitely will. And I've got to tell you, man, these Jews seem to be cracking down on the social media like crazy. They have been hitting Twitter, hitting YouTube, left, right, and center in every conceivable way. Now they are trying to shut down free speech. And of course, most of the internet free speech is coming from white people. White people, those people who stand up and have principles. And of course, now they have to be shut up. So yeah, Peter, we'll carry on our fight and we'll be talking again. Take care.
Thank you.
So I hope that you enjoyed that chat with Dr. Peter Hammond. Kick-ass Rhodesian, still busy with his stuff. And we've not forgotten Rhodesia. And if you think that we will stand around and let them do the same stuff in South Africa that they did up there, think again. So that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. Take care of yourselves. We'll be chatting again soon.